This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Texas blowing up, Dave.
I can't imagine why. What did we say?
The texters are just going crazy. And you guys can jump in, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. We will get to Lamar Jackson and spring training and everything, but we did ask a question in the last segment based on a tweet from Dan Orlovsky, who was talking to somebody, made the if you're just joining us, he was responding to somebody who said, hey, I just want to have a giant hair dryer to dry my body after I get out of the shower. I don't want to use a towel. And then a back and forth started. And then Orlovsky asked him, well, how many times do you use a towel before you throw it in the laundry? He said, I'm at about 30. And there was no smiley face or winky like, God, just kidding. And then Ryan Leaf jumps in on the thread and says, I'm right there with you, Dan, probably around 30, which reminds me, I need to go throw my towel in the laundry. I'm like, you guys are disgusting.
Well, think about it. I mean, that's an entire month if you only shower one time a day. Sometimes it's two if you work out, right? You wake up, you take a shower. If you work out, you don't want to take your, you know, sweaty whatever to bed, right?
Yes, I cannot. I have to go to bed clean.
Yeah. So, you don't want to lay there in your
filth.
My mom used to say, your daily dirt.
Exactly right. She's a Carol Wyman knows her business, by God.
Yeah. So, a lot of times it's two times a day, but if it's one, a whole month without washing taking your towel down. I mean, we have probably 10 or 12 towels. So
yeah, you've got a rotation you can do there. 425 says one and done. Anything else is gross. Let's see. There's some long ones here. Let's see. You're all wasting water. 30 minute. We're not talking about water usage here. We're talking about how many times do you use a towel? And then some Thumb got a little grossed out that you use Shannon's towel after she showers.
Yeah.
Dave, when Bob and Thumb get past the dating stage and graduate to living together, e.g. married, they'll start to understand. Sheesh, kids these days.
Well, look, if the towel is like damp from her having a shower, then I'll trade it out. But, you know, I mean, I'm not worried about that. Like I said, my wife doesn't have cooties. Okay, so I don't have a problem with that.
425 says three washes and, of course, share a towel with your spouse.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think anybody that's married kind of knows that. I mean, if you're to the point where it's like, you know, I can't use the same towel as you. I feel like we've swapped, you know.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean you have to, Dave. It doesn't, you know, I'm kind of leaning toward left coast position here a bit. I got to be honest. I'd prefer I had my towel. She has her towel. And he brought up to use the same toothbrush. Kind of the same theory.
Where does it end?
Why would you jump to that conclusion? That's something that you stick inside your dirty mouth, okay? When you come out of the shower, you're clean, okay? We both are really good showers.
We're very thorough.
Yeah. So, but, you know, like I said, if it's damp. But like somebody on one of the other texters said, it's about the mildew, you know, from being damp, especially here in the Northwest during the winter. You know, I don't know how
does it not stink? I mean, wouldn't you smell have you ever left laundry in the washing machine? You forgot to throw it in the dryer. And then 2 days later, you open the lid and you're like, oh, man.
I remember wearing one of the first Seahawk events I went to. I wore a shirt that had been left.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like hot and sweaty. And then the smell came out. And I was like, oh, my God, this
milk
is
or
awful.
Something. Yeah. Yeah. It's terrible. 509, 2 to 3 times max. You know that dead skin cells come off as you rub your wet skin, right? Come on, humans, be cleaner.
Well, that's the thing. You know, if you start to really dive deep into all the things like, you know, skin and, you know, all kinds of things that come off your body and hair and stuff like that, you can get really freaked out.
Yeah, I don't need to go down that road. Yeah, so I'm bad enough as it is.
That's why people, I think sometimes we'll have real problems with that.
Yeah. You know? Jen in Beaverton says, Mike thinks his own body is less stanky than a potential spouse's body. He's going to ignore that one. let's see. Martin in Ocean Shores, 3 to 4 times for me, 30 times, gross. Yeah, I don't know that anybody's agreeing with 30 times. That's just pure filth.
How about this? You're saving water by not washing as many towels. Come on. Give me a break.
No.
That's no way to conserve water. There's lots of other ways.
See, here's what
you can conserve water.
206. Yeah, I use a shower towel a couple of weeks before it goes into the laundry. So what is that? At least four. Assuming you do it at least once a day, that's 14 times.
That's a violation.
That's too many, man. That is too many.
2 weeks, 2 showers a day. Yeah, that's. Sorry, 206. You got to get on it.
I like people stop being disgusting. Another one, probably 30 to 60 times when I was younger. Now once a week, so around 7 times in between washes. That's still too much for me. I mean, hey, help yourself. They're your towels.
I think a lot of people are assuming that there's not good showering, good quality showering going on. Because if that's the case, then you should be okay to let it dry off a couple of times.
Do you ever use, like if you're at somebody's house and you wash your hands and there's no hand towel, but there's a shower towel, do you use it? Because I don't. I'll sit there and dry my hand.
Really?
Well, because I don't know where their towel's been. That's their shower towel. Like there's been a number of times I've been at somebody's house and use their bathroom and I'm washing my hands. I look and there's no hand towel hanging there, but then I look over and they've got a shower towel hanging and I'm like, I'm not wiping my hands on that.
Okay. If there's no hand towel.
Yeah. No hand towel.
It kind of shoots down my whole thing about that. You should be clean when you're coming out. But if you're at somebody else's house, you don't know what their standards are.
No idea.
Really good friend. And remember went into their bathroom and their toilet and everything was just filthy. And I was like, That was weird because we, you know, agreed on pretty much everything else. And, yeah, I was like, everybody has different standards. Like, and he's probably going, well, it's a toilet.
Yeah. Yeah, we heard you. We heard you.
Yeah.
You can keep the text going. 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. So glad to see most people are in our line of thinking here. Meanwhile, we talked about this a little bit yesterday with our guest. You and I didn't really get into it. The Lamar Jackson thing I find fascinating because he's tweeting about, you know, his contract situation. He wants a fully guaranteed deal like Deshaun Watson. I haven't heard an actual dollar amount that he wants. I know it's over $200 million. I don't know exactly what it is. But he tweeted out that he turned down a 3-year, $133 million deal fully guaranteed. Which I'm looking at that going, you know, that almost seems like a good thing for you. It's fully guaranteed. You're getting $133 million. You know, God forbid you suffer an injury, you never play another down. You're set for life unless you're just a knucklehead with your money. $133 million in addition to whatever he's made in endorsements and salary up to this point. So in that scenario, 3 years, you get every dollar of it. And then you jump back into the market. You're 29 years old. He's only going to be 29 when that happens.
Yeah, I have a hard time understanding that one. And Lamar Jackson is a bit of an enigma as far as, you know, what kind of player is, where does he fit in as far as, you know, compared to other quarterbacks. And, I mean, the guy's magic, right?
Yeah.
You get him out in open space. And, you know, he's had years where he's had really good completion percentage and, you know, been like a – as good as anybody, you know, who is just a pocket passer that can't run.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy can run. I think that also, though, is part of the reason why people are maybe a little bit more hesitant to pay him just because of the injuries. And I'm looking, you know, I mean, his first, he hasn't missed a lot of games. Last year, the last 2 years, he's missed 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, how you weigh that. Do you also think about, I mean, What is the name of the GM? Is Eric DaCosta, I believe.
Yeah, he's the one that was taking shots at the receivers.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering, okay, that's who you're dealing with, and he's shown some poor decision-making by the tweet that he sent out, you know, talking about his own receivers. Which, by the way, he's complaining about the receivers that he picked.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, maybe Lamar is not, I mean, if he's dealing with the Seahawks, maybe it goes differently for him. But I don't know about you. I thought $133 million guaranteed for a 3-year period of time. I thought that was a pretty good offer, man.
What did El Hombre say? 44.3 year average? Something like that?
Something like that.
You figured that out.
The radio math, yeah.
Yeah, figured it out on the spot.
Yeah.
But it just, that seems like, again, I understand injury is a big fear, and you're trying to protect yourself in you know, in case you get injured. That's 133 guaranteed. And hopefully you don't get injured. But if you do, I think you're going to be okay. And there's probably endorsements for him after his football career. There's probably broadcasting opportunities or whatever he wants to do. Should he have the desire to work, he won't need to. But even with that, you get a chance 3 years from now. What's this quarterback market going to look like? What's the price? What's sticker shock going to look like then? We're talking about Aaron Rodgers right now with a $60 million price tag on him for this year. That's going to get restructured, but that's where he's at. So 3 years from now, Joe Burrow will have signed a new deal. Jalen Hurts will have signed a new deal. What are we looking at then? Is Patrick Mahomes 3 years from now going to be negotiating a brand new deal that's going to put him somewhere to be competitive with who's signed deals since he has? His deal will be outdated. I mean, so he gets the chance to jump back into the market after 3 years and pocketing 133 guaranteed. And then maybe, you know, now he thinks he should be a 45 $50 million a year guy. 3 years from now, maybe it's 55, 60 million a year.
Well, it's amazing. I didn't even think about that, Bob. I mean, he just turned a couple months ago 26.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like he's old by any. Now, there's a difference between a running quarterback and a pocket quarterback, you know, because I would say it makes you better. It's the one position at quarterback that age actually helps you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get smarter, you get, you know, you see defenses better, you run the offense better, things like that. But for him, you know, he does like to run. And so it's working against him a little bit, but to me, not that much. I mean, and look, he knows how to take a hit. He knows when to slide. I feel like that's the thing when you're a running quarterback, and maybe I overemphasize, you know, how dangerous that is. But if you're not plowing into guys and you're making good decisions in the open field, like, okay, I'm going to get down now, or I'm going to get out instead of trying to get an extra 6 yards, I'm going to run out of bounds. You can definitely manage that. I feel like so. Yeah, the $133 million, and you know, I think he has a family member working for him as his agent, and to me, that's the one thing I get. Now, I had the best agent not because of me. He took me on as a favor. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Marvin Demoff represented John Elway, and Jack Elway was my coach at Stanford. So he asked Marvin to, you know, can you take Dave on? So, you know, and I was a second rounder, and everybody else he had were, you know, first round guys. I would get very little phone time with him. Mm-hmm. He would suddenly just go, okay, call me next Tuesday and hang up on me. And I guess he said Tuesdays because that's like the national day off in the NFL.
He would hang up on
there
you.
Were so many times that happened. But I'm like, okay. You know, like Marvin called the whole free agency thing. When we went on strike,
yeah.
Marvin Demoff told me, this is what's going to happen. This judge in the 8th District Court of Appeals in Minneapolis named Doty, I can't remember his first name.
Yeah, I remember that name.
Yeah, and he's going to, you know, rule in your favor, and you guys are going to have free agency, and you don't even need to go on strike. You don't need to go on strike, but he told me go on strike because all your teammates are going to go on strike, so you don't want to be like a scab or whatever they called it back then. And he knew that whole thing, and he called it. He called it like a, I don't know, 2 or 3 years earlier. So he was just a really smart guy. So I was just like, okay, whatever you get, I trust that. And there are some good agents and there are some bad ones. And I'm sure there are some good ones right now. And I don't understand the hassle over, I feel like you're haggling over 3%, or, you know, sometimes in these big money ones, they'll do 2,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I remember Jack Elway telling me that Marvin was, you know, I think for Elway, he was asking for like 2%.
Mm.
And, you know, for me, it was like 3%, but his deal was so big.
And then he hung up on you.
And then he hung up.
I love that.
And what
call
did
me
he,
Tuesday, Clint.
What did he say? Yeah.
Hello.
I'll talk
Hello?
To you next Tuesday. So, yeah, I mean, I don't get the whole thing of representing yourself or having a family member. To me, that, I'm sorry. I think it's a bad idea.
Well, and when we talked with El Hombre yesterday, he made a good point. You look at his last 2 years. He's got past 2 seasons combined. You talked about the games missed. Okay, that's one thing. But then you look at he's thrown a combined 33 touchdowns and 20 interceptions. not great. These aren't his great years. He had better. He had, you know, obviously in 2019, 36 touchdowns, 6 picks. Following year, 26 touchdowns, 9 picks. Then in 2021, 16 touchdowns, 13 picks. And then last year, 17 touchdowns, 7 picks.
Which is pretty good, right? I mean, we'd always talk about single-digit interceptions.
Yeah.
It's a really good thing.
It was in
12
games, so he missed 5 games. And then his completion percentage went down. So you just look at the last 2 years, you know, 62.3% last year, the year before that, 64.4. His best year is 2019, without question. Now, he brings the other element of his ability to run. You know, he had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons in 19 and 20, and then the last 2 years he's 767 yards and then 764 yards for a total of 5 combined touchdowns. But he's not throwing for a million yards. His best year yardage-wise is 3,127.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, again, he's still young. He can work his way back to that. Like you said, since that time, in the 36 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, amazing. You know, he's gone down a little bit as far as yardage. But now you've got a chance to sort of resurrect yourself. And like you said, get ready for the next free agency.
29 years old.
When you're 29.
And that number is going to be so bloated. The salary cap will continue to go up.
But, you know, I don't know how much to put on Lamar Jackson, and really, I know it was just one comment, but I just never heard anybody be so negligent with their words in Eric DaCosta. Not only complaining about the receivers that he has, but they're guys that he picked.
Yeah.
So it just makes you wonder, maybe it's a little bit of both going on there.
It's a weird thing. I don't know. And I don't... The idea of collusion, that they're all, you know, GMs behind the scenes saying, oh, don't sign them. Don't do that because you're going to reset the market. Everybody's going to expect a guaranteed deal. I don't know how many people are going to be eager to give him a guaranteed deal because of the injury factor.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you're committing. The Deshaun Watson deal is an outlier. That does not look like something that's going to become the norm. You know, this fully guaranteed deal like that. And I know that's what, you know, as soon as that was signed, that's what Lamar wants. He's even more prone to injury just because of how he plays the game, and he's been injured the past 2 years. So I don't blame an opposing GM or a GM who would otherwise be interested that looks at it and says, well, yeah, I'd love to have him on my team, but I can't guarantee him 200 and whatever million he's looking for and give up the draft picks I have to give up in order to sign him because he's been franchise tagged. That's a lot. So it feels like an obvious apprehension and choice. Rather than, okay, we're all agreeing not to sign him to a guaranteed deal. I don't think you need to twist anybody's arm to not do that.
Yeah, the collusion thing to me is a mystery.
You see it everywhere. You got players calling, tell me it's not collusion. And I'm like,
well, that's the kind of thing that goes on when you don't get what you want, right? You know, and so that can be the only explanation is to cry out that. So it's just, I don't know, it's kind of one of those buzzwords. Like if somebody's after you for taxes and they're, you know, and you use the word harass, they're like, whoa, 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 I'm not harassing here. I'm not actually harassing you. I'm just wondering where the money is. I mean, this is kind of the same thing where, you know, that word collusion. I mean, have we had a case in the NFL that's been
proven? Not that proven? I'm aware of. No. This seems... That seems silly to me to say that because this just seems an obvious. If I'm a GM and I'm looking at him going, I love this guy. I'd love to have him as my quarterback. But to pretend there's zero concern, yeah, 200, what do you want? 240 guaranteed every dollar? You got it. I'm going to ignore the fact that you've been hurt the past 2 seasons. I'm going to ignore how you play the game in running the ball. And I'm going to ignore the numbers that have gone down the past 2 years. I'm going to throw all that out the window. Here's 240. Come on over. I don't think you need to talk somebody into not doing that. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very reasonable position to take to say, yeah, I love the guy. He's a brilliant talent, but it's a big but, yeah. And they're reasonable. these aren't, you know, hey, you're nitpicking. No. Just look at it. Look at it. When you're talking to, if this were baseball, maybe you it's a different conversation because there is no salary cap. They still have to field a team. They've got to be able to put pieces around him, whether it's in Baltimore or elsewhere, and to guarantee him that kind of money. Again, you're seeing the Browns have already restructured Deshaun Watson's deal 1 year after signing it. So it's just it's an untenable situation at this point.
You know, is Lamar Jackson a guy that you've heard much from? I guess I don't see him in front of the podium a lot. He seems like kind of a shy guy, mm-hmm. You know, doesn't talk a lot. But I'm curious what kind of a leader he is. You know, his teammates seem to love him. You know, and that's the thing we talked about, like the difference with Kyler Murray. You know, and I don't know that his teammates dislike him, but it's not like
I don't know if they love
him. He's one of the guys, and you love him. You know, and we were talking about this with Kelnick. Like, we kind of wondered about Jared Kelnick, and you know what? He's super intense, doesn't seem to lighten up and laugh a lot. Never heard one complaint from his teammates. So, you know, if I'm just curious how the rest of the team feels about Lamar Jackson, because yeah, you just don't hear from him that much, and you don't see he's not real demonstrative on the. On the field, but he does make people look foolish.
I would love to have him on this team. Just about every franchise in the league would love to have him, but there's a breaking point in terms of cost in what you're committing to and the chance you're willing to take in terms of a gamble that he's going to stay healthy and be available for all these games to make up for what you're paying him in guaranteed money. It's rare that I take the owner's side, but I kind of take the owner's side in this situation. Yeah. It makes sense to me. All right, coming up, our hope for one Mariners breakout candidate hasn't panned out yet, but is it too early to make a final decision on him? We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
It's just spring training, Dave. That's what we keep saying, right? That's always the qualifier.
No, not if it's Jared Kelnick.
Well, I want to believe it's more than just spring training when it comes to him, and we'll find out. But when it's something bad, I'm chalking it up to it's just spring training.
So you're going to pick and choose.
Yeah, I'm going to cherry pick is what I'm going to do.
Because there we go. I thought that last year when you were complaining about Eugenio's three
games in a row with an error.
Yeah. I'm just going to write that one off.
That was pretty unique because it came on the heels of the conversation we had with the guy from Cincinnati who said, yeah, his range is not what it was. He's gotten a little bigger, and we're kind of, you know, we're not watching Gino Suarez in Cincinnati, so we're listening to the guy that covers him, and then we were first three games in a row with an error. We're going, oh, good God.
Yeah, it was well-founded. And that's the thing. I mean, you sit there and look at it and go, okay, what I mean, and we are cherry picking with Jared Kelnick because typically you'd go, it's spring.
Yeah.
The opposing pitchers are working on things.
That's right. He's teeing off on easy work out there. Hopefully it carries over. But in the case of Evan White, I think you and I are both on the same page and really, really rooting for this kid. I really want him to be something for this team. I don't know if he's going to. I don't know if it's there. And it is just spring training. I get it. But he was already optioned back to AAA Tacoma. He had one hit. He was hitting .077 when they made this move.
Well, what about the one hit, though, Bob?
It was a home run that I think even at the time I said, it was a pretty windy day. It might have helped get it out. But, yeah, I hate qualifying it because I love this kid. And I desperately want him to be good and be able to just – he doesn't have to be a superstar hitter. He'd just be a guy who's not a liability up there.
Well, and, you know, I understand that sometimes, like, Mariner fans will – like, it's easier to not like or to go, he's terrible if the guy's not, like, the greatest guy in the world. He doesn't, you know, come off. The Mariners don't have any guys like that.
No.
I got to say, we talked to all of them. But, I mean, Evan White is just, my point is, so lovable. He's just such a good dude. And he, you know, he was a gold glove in the pandemic shortened season. But still, and he batted, what, like 125 or something like that.
Oh, yeah, it was brutal.
Yeah, so, yeah, it just, it's one of those that, but are we being greedy? Because everything worked out really well so far for Jared Kelnick.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, spring has been great for Kelnick. Now, Evan White, he hasn't had a lot of time. He hasn't had a lot of at-bats because of injuries. You know, it's not just that he hasn't been able to hit at the major league level. He just hasn't been able to get on the field. So I get that, you know, the idea of him being with the big club coming out of spring training probably wasn't realistic. But we got a little excited seeing him out there playing just brilliant defense once again, hearing Jerry DePoto talking about him as one of the best he's ever seen, and just seeing it with your own eyes and go, my goodness, if this guy could hit, what a weapon he is defensively. And then, you know, you bring yourself back to reality going, okay, he's had very little time out there and they want him to get a bunch of at-bats. So it makes sense, but just to see him kind of struggling at a time where often guys will tee off. We used to talk about it with Daniel Vogelback. He'd just tear apart spring, and then he'd come up to the big leagues and he wouldn't hit. Right. He'd walk, which everybody loved a great deal when he'd clog up the base pass sitting there on first base. But here's Jerry DePoto talking about, is this since they sent him down or is this before?
This is early February. This is with you guys.
Okay.
I believe.
Yeah. All right. Here's Jerry talking about Evan White and just needing these at-bats right now.
He'll come to spring training. You know, he needs at-bats. He's missed a lot of plate appearances over the last 2 years. And, you know, that what that looks like, he'll compete for a spot on the roster. The likelihood is we'll want him to gather up some at-bats in AAA and get back to some type of routine. But he's got the talent where you don't hold him back. It's up to his health to determine the impact that he can have on our team. And we're still hopeful that that's a real thing.
So, yeah, I mean, what he's saying is it makes sense. He's missed so much time. You just want him to see live pitching and just be there in the box and just face it and find your timing, find your rhythm. And it obviously wasn't happening in spring. I think I said at one point he had 12 plate appearances, one hit, 6 strikeouts. You're just like, okay, he's not finding it here. It's not happening, and it's a very small sample size. But he just, you know, it's probably the right move. It's not about whether it was the right move or wrong move. It's, do you believe that he can be a guy at this level? Is he going to be a guy we just look at and go, hey, remember Evan White? Yeah. Thought he was going to be great, just could never find it offensively, or just could never stay healthy enough to give himself a chance to find it. You know, obviously the Mariners believed in him because they paid him $24 million. You know, for a guy that hadn't played a moment at the big league level.
Yeah. I thought that was really an interesting contract when it was signed, just because, you know, he wasn't necessarily betting on himself, but it's worked out well for him. But look, there's no way that he's sitting there going, yeah, I'm so glad I did that. All he cares about is I've got a hit. And, you know, and maybe Jerry and Scott see a very clear path for him, and that's why they optioned him down to AAA, that he needs to get to work and get more at-bats and, you know, get a chance to get things right. I'm trying to think of just how he's hit before. I mean, it's not like he's been as bad as the huge part of his game, right? It's defense.
Well, that's his calling card is defense, but he's got some pop. I think you want him at first base. You want your guy to be able to provide some pop as a first baseman, but it for various reasons hasn't happened to this point. And Jerry just talking about, you know, the impact he could have with this team.
You know, I think it's just finding that one bat that clicks for us. You know, who that bat is, I'm not entirely sure yet in our system. As we cycle through the DH position, you want one guy to be able to step up and take a bulk of those. That could be Evan White, you know, and it's a guy we're not really counting on coming into spring training, who I think has looked outstanding in the early going. Again, trying to temper the enthusiasm, but he changes our team defensively if he hits. And he doesn't have to hit fourth or fifth. He can hit seventh or eighth. And if he hits, it just changes is the way our team is perceived.
Now, what are we talking about for Ty France? Because if he hits, he's going to be out at first base, right?
I would assume, yeah. I don't know. How do they manage him physically? Are they worried that, hey, man, sort of like they did with Kyle Lewis, not to that extent, but maybe we don't play him. We play him in back-to-back nights here and there, but for the most part, we're going to try to spell him so he's not beating up his body, and we throw Ty France. Maybe it's a rotation. You know, he's playing first, then the other guy goes to DH. And
wasn't that the one position where you at least beat up your body, first base?
That's why they talked about him in the outfield, it didn't make – not that he couldn't do it and he's not athletic.
Yeah.
Just that this guy's had hip issues, had lower body issues.
Didn't make sense.
And you're going to have him out there sprinting and potentially running into walls. And it just didn't seem, for a guy that's had those injuries and appears to be a bit fragile, the best idea to throw him in the outfield. But I understand they're trying to just get his bat in the lineup if he can hit. But that's the question. Can he hit? Is it going to happen? Do you believe he's going to find it, Dave, at some point?
I'm going to believe in him. I think, you know, but again, I think we're being greedy because we got so much out of Jared Kelnick in spring training. We want everything. We want Evan White to work out. You know, and I think Evan White gives him a lot of flexibility, right? I mean, that would really help this team. Now, we talked about Kelnick being in left field. Ultimately, that's huge. But you know, you get a chance that maybe you could put Ty France as your DH, and you know, this is a guy you don't ever worry about. Did he have like one error that year? I mean, I know it was the shortened COVID.
I don't even know. He's just so good there. He's just, you know, again, we talk about Ty France, and man, he's a good first baseman. He's not a guy you go, well, you're getting by. You know, as Pete says, he gets through it. You know, there's nothing like that. Ty does a nice job. But then when you see Evan White out there, you go, my goodness. And you hear the other guys. You hear Jerry. You hear other people, Perry Hill, people talking about, no, he's special. That's a just a different level of good. He's a phenomenal defensive player.
But one error in 2020.
Yeah, he's just –
54
and that,
games.
That does so much for your infielders. It does so much for the guy on the mound. There's just such a trickle-down effect to a guy who can have that sort of defensive impact and have the confidence from your infielders that, hey, I can attempt a throw here that I otherwise might not attempt because I know he's going to be able to pick it. Yep. He's going to come up with it. All right, coming up, we heard something last week from Geno Smith that led us to one of the biggest what-ifs in recent Seahawks history. It is What If Wednesday. It's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
What?
What?
What? What?
It's time for What If Wednesday.
Coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We'd have been state champions, no doubt.
Wyman and Bob rewrite the scripts of major moves and moments in sports every Wednesday afternoon. Now step into an alternative reality with Wyman and Bob.
Programming note coming up at 4 o'clock, we will speak to the voice of the Green Bay Packers. Wayne Larrivee will join us on the program. We'll talk about Jaron Reed coming back to Seattle. He was with Green Bay last year. And, of course, the Aaron Rodgers saga, which continues. We'll talk about that. So that's coming up at 4 o'clock. Meanwhile, time for What If Wednesday, which is presented by Mazda of Everett.
This is a good one.
It is interesting because it's Geno talked. He was on after their press conference. He had the press conference announcing the new deal, talking with the media. And then he jumped on with Bump and Stacy and talked about the confidence he gained when Russ got hurt. Russ goes down. Geno gets thrown in the middle of a game, and then he plays for a few games after that. And he talked about what that did for his confidence.
I remember that night, that Thursday night, and when Russ got hurt. And to be honest, he didn't want to come out that game. You know, he kept going back in, and I kind of had to tell him, like, hey, man, it's kind of my time. You know, I got to go out here right now. You know, I kind of felt it in my spirit just the entire year that, you know, something was going to happen. And so when I got that opportunity, I just wanted to go out there and play ball, you know, just having an opportunity to play with these guys and be out there competing with my teammates is something that I truly enjoy. But, you know, I had done well in preseasons before. That gave me confidence. And then obviously, you know, playing a three-game stretch, you know, we were 1-2 and winning is what matters the most. But I felt good out there, and so I knew that, you know, I could improve and get better.
So what if Russell didn't get hurt?
Bob, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to say it. That's a great question. But Lefkoe's
the one.
Does that
count for me, then?
Lefkoe gets
it. Yeah, you can put it up on the board for you.
Mike Lefkoe.
I'm embarrassingly behind, so thank you.
Go ahead. There's one for Lefkoe.
This is a really good one because, yeah, I mean, does he have the same – maybe – you know, is Pete going to step in at some point? Maybe he's throwing some picks and the clash sort of happens earlier, you know, in 2021 that, you know, maybe and then it boils during the season or maybe he goes out and just tears it up or, you know, I don't know. It's very interesting. It's kind of weird, though, that Geno in his quote there said that I kind of felt like it was my time, like something was going to happen. I'm like, you sat behind Russell for how many years?
Yeah.
And you thought something was going to happen?
Now he's going to get hurt?
Yeah.
Yeah, he should go to Vegas and start putting down some big bets, man.
I mean, I guess he didn't sit that long behind him, right? I mean, 2020, is that the first year?
Was it 20 or 19? I can't remember.
Well, 19, I don't think Geno played. Am I looking at the wrong thing? Oh, Geno Smith. Yeah, so, you know, it just felt like he was there for forever sitting behind Russ. And, you know, like I always say, backup quarterbacks, it's a ridiculously hard job because you got to be ready to go at a moment's notice. And
when you've talked about this that, and others have, that Russell is a rep hog, which you appreciate as a fan of the team, that your starter is out there and he wants all the reps. I mean, the preparation is key. So not a bad thing from a fan perspective, but if you're a guy sitting behind him, it doesn't do much to prepare you.
At all. And that's the one sport where you really need the reps. Like, you know, I feel like you can, well, you know, basketball, you can do all kinds of things that are simulate a game. You know, it doesn't take that many people. You can't go out and just practice football the way it's. And that's why the XFL's such a good deal. And that's probably why Geno had that conversation with John Schneider.
Yeah.
Remember Schneider told us about that, you know.
Talking about the CFL.
CFL, maybe going up there and getting some reps.
How much confidence do you think Pete and John gained from those games? I mean, how different would their opinion of Geno been? Yeah, they watch him in practice, but practice is practice, and as Allen Iverson would say. But game situation. They had something to go on. Yeah, they didn't do well. They went 1-2 in those games. Right. So winning wise, yeah, it wasn't like he came in and they went undefeated and he's just lighting it up left and right. No, there was it didn't go perfectly, but you did see some things that led you to, wow, he made some good decisions. He made some nice throws. He did some things that maybe they hadn't seen in a game situation that counted, certainly, playing preseason. So I'm wondering how crucial was, you know, we're talking about what did that do for his confidence. What did it do for Pete and John's confidence that this whole blow up behind the scenes, whatever happened with Russ happened, and they felt comfortable going, you know what, we're bringing Geno back. We're going to let him compete with Drew Locke.
Yeah.
And we're going to feel good about whoever wins this competition, whereas maybe if that hadn't happened, but there's still the blow up and Russ, you know, still got traded, would they have been more likely to say, Drew's our guy. We're super excited about him coming in.
Yeah.
We like that we have Geno here. It's great security. He knows the system. If Drew has trouble, whatever. I'm wondering how different their approach would have been if Russ never got hurt.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. Maybe it would have been the same thing where they go, hey, we're coming in because we have so much. And, you know, like I always say, we don't see practice, but apparently he didn't get a lot of reps at practice.
Yeah.
Geno didn't. So, but remember in that first game when Russ came out, I think he went in there for a couple plays, but then the next drive, he took him 85 yards for a touchdown. And I feel like Pete might have looked at John afterwards and gone like, wow, you know, this is kind of what we thought we had, but you see him in a game-like situation.
So if they never saw that, then maybe they go into the offseason with a completely different feeling about Geno, or just more uncertainty, certainly.
Yeah, and so, you know, that he went 71% the next game, which was Pittsburgh, and then not a good day against New Orleans. It wasn't a great performance. Didn't throw any picks, but, you know, and then the last game against Jacksonville. And everybody, Jacksonville's terrible, but I mean, he did to that defense what you should do to that defense, and he just carved him up. He was throwing balls, throwing guys open. He looked really good. So, but yeah, if he didn't have those games right there, I'm not sure. But even and without that, does Russ still go in and take the path that he takes in the offseason?
Yeah, I don't.
That's where it gets really weird, Bob. This is like Twilight Zone.
Maybe he feels more emboldened to do that. I don't know. Because Geno played well, there's a lot of trickle down to this whole thing.
You think that's a great question, don't you?
It is a great question. That's why he gets a mark on the board.
No, I'm talking about mine just now. Like, what if Russ?
Oh no, I'm still
hurt.
Giving Lefko credit.
Yeah, he gets the credit there. But it's very interesting. The path with Geno is like no other. I mean, you can't really find a player like this. I mean, I know people talked about Rich Gannon, a few years ago, but
Jim Plunkett.
Yeah, Plunkett was sort of resurrected, but man, this is after, you know, in his 10th year. It's just, it's incredible what he's done. And now, I don't know, how much faith do you have in Geno? I mean, are you like, hey, I feel pretty good about my quarterback.
Just way better than I ever did last year.
Yeah.
Going into last season, I was like, hey, this is temporary, whether it's Drew. I thought Drew would be the guy eventually. I thought, all right, fine, Geno's going to get the start. Drew didn't really get his fair shake because he got COVID. He didn't get the game that he was supposed to get. So he goes in as the presumptive leader because he's been there. He knows the system and players. Drew's trying to catch up, and then he misses his opportunity with COVID. I kind of thought, you know, week 4 or so, week 5 probably, Geno maybe is playing okay, and then this is where they want to see what Drew brings to the table. But he took it and ran with it. So that gives me much more confidence, than to say the very least, than I had going into last season. I don't know if it's fair to expect him to duplicate last year. I don't think I hold him to that standard.
Well, he better, because it's worth like $10 million to him. Right.
Incentive-wise, I know I'm sure he's capable, but to expect that, hey, you're 4,000 yards, I don't know. I don't. We'll see. We'll see. He's shown he can do it, but consistency is the key here. All right, coming up, a lot of news surrounding the Packers, one of which a player that's left the Packers and comes back to Seattle, and Jaron Reed, and, of course, everything going on with Aaron Rodgers. We'll discuss it all with the man who calls the action for Green Bay. Wayne Larrivee will join us next year with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.